I don't know how many times I washed past tables and got snagged it on my clothing. I'm just like cracked it off like
I have one at home. Yeah. Split off, and so I glued it. And I realized the whole thing was bowed. Ken. Okay. All right. We have before us a request for a contested case hearing. A contested case. Somebody want to make a motion with regard to that request?
Well, I move to deny the request.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Your request for a contested case is denied. Mm-hmm. So please proceed to discuss. Okay.
I'm going to refer back to the cover memo.
Okay.
And I'm going to preface it by saying we've been trying to get out to do work there for months. Every time we do, we get sidelined. Okay? I'll pick up from my last statement before you went into executive session, which is, the end of 2017, we did the bid.
Sorry, can I just clarify again? The contractor is Coconut Wireless LLC, and that's you?
Yes.
Okay, and your relationship is?
I work for him.
You work for him, okay. Thank you. Okay, go ahead.
You good? Okay. At that time, we prepared and did the bid for DOBR, which is under your DLNR. At that time, we had plenty of staff to take care of the C-13 work. So on my submittal, on our submittal for subcontractors, we didn't put any subs in there because we didn't need it. As it turned out, we had to use those same people in deployment and other contracts. We did that. At the NTP meeting, when we talked about that, after the preliminaries, we got the contract, I said, we're going to need to bring in some subs. At that meeting, there was no, and you see some of the information I gave you, there was no word saying no. Okay? Naturally, we bring people in that are licensed, et cetera, et cetera. You see them in the documentation. And the superintendent of the time asked us to use this particular firm up on the Windward side. And we did that. Got the job done. And we were proceeding to go ahead and use subs until our people came back from being deployed. And that was shut down. I've done probably about 120 contracts specifications a year for the state. In those, sometimes, and I talked to State SPO about this, sometimes afterward the general contractor has to swap out subs, put in new subs, whatever. Things may change. And in the interim general conditions of this contract, there's provision for that. There's another one here that talks about you can do it for 1%, which is fine. If we would have known that the NTP would have been delayed that long, we would have brought in subs. We did it as a favor to DOBOR to give them more manpower. We wanted to get the job done, and that was stopped. They also changed the rules of engagement on the contract spec on work hours. The spec says 7:30 to 4:30, which we're fine with. They changed, they asked us to do it 5 to 2:30. Okay, that's contrary to also the general conditions that the people have to work at least 6 hours. That's only 5.5 hours. Okay? The reason they did it is to accommodate their own people for the inspection, which is, I understand that. But there's a couple other items that were also changed in the bid spec. You don't do that after you give a contract. So we thought, okay, fine. Are we going to fight this? To wait till our people can become available again. So the last couple weeks we've had a memo for you, and so this meeting actually just kind of brought it to culmination. So it's up to you. In the meeting, continue on where I was reading, under the reason, after an 8-month delay, 232 days elapsed. Per the general conditions set of contract, SPO maximum allowable delays 180 days for agency response between notice of award and NTP. Okay, so we're out of bed on that. At that time, we thought of going ahead and saying, well, let's revisit this. Let's not accept the NTP. But we knew that DOBR needed the work done. And we know the harbors. That's not an issue. And we have the people. We have the resources. Okay? And especially we're able to sub some work. Okay? So we want to get in there and do the work. Okay? The delay caused, the delay condition created by the state set off a series of challenges to the contract, including increased costing requirements to subcontract labor as a stopgap measure. Stopgap measure. Either you want to get the work done or you don't. We're ready to do the work. That's normal SOP, the standard operating procedure. You bring somebody in. The state initially understood the labor issues and requested contract use of contractors as an interim measure. Yes. The later state council then rescinded the subcontractor usage without notice. Okay, so now we're stuck. Now what do we do? We had to wait till our guys came back from deployment, and they're here. Okay. Our personnel back from assignment, we are able to continue carrying on the contract work per spec as of now. We offered this to the state to consider to add an addendum to your memo, Chair Case, which set this in motion. That gave us 14 days to, I think, 6 or 7 assignments, which is pretty gutsy, even with several crews. Because DOBR didn't even have the personnel the time to really cover that amount of time. From Haleiwa, Waianae, that's a lot of travel, that's a lot of troubleshooting, that's a lot of work to do. One of them was Alawai. I have a report about Alawai, and there's so much work that needs to be done there. It's not 14 days just for that. That's probably like, if you want to do it right, probably 30, 60 days of time just for that harbor. When we worked it before, we noticed so many irregularities that it was scary. Wires buried in the road without conduit. We have them noted, we have them mapped. There's a risk here. We're trying to do things for DNR, DOBOR, per spec, per code, and we've done that. And now we're trying to get this map off the ground. So, we offered the state, and we wanted to do this before we got blocked, okay? To add an addendum to your memo, to update. Matter of fact, I sent you an email about this, and you said go work it out with DOBR. And the DOBR manager didn't want to chat, so here we are today. And update the date for assignments completion to 60 days. So if you took your memo, said, okay, we're here now, we want to get the work done, yes or no. If you took that memo and just put an addendum on it, and it's in your package, to allow us 60 days, even 30, we have a fighting chance. 60 days would be better. There's too much work out there to do it right and get support from DOBR. Give me an inspector so every day when we're finished we can get inspected. Assignment's completion to 60 days from the date of this board meeting here, then your work can be done. We don't have to go through this. We don't have to go through other procedural items, and the work can be done. So if you updated your memo, put an addendum to it, because that's what set this in motion. Give us 60 days from the date of this meeting, and we were pleased to report action to Ted's office also. This appears to be a good solution sitting here today. It is our recommendation to you. If you want the work done, this is the recommendation. Because this whole thing was set in motion by that memo, which was fine procedurally. But now we're here, our people are back, we have the resource, we can do the work. Start out by the
end of this month. People?
Oh, different assignments. We had different contracts. And we didn't, you know, we were surprised also to find that the money on this contract was not encumbered until October. 8 months to encumber money for this? When we do bids with the state, now I ask them, is the money encumbered? They say no, then we don't bid. It's a throw of the dice. And I know the state law, we know the state law that says if the funds are available, we do it. But why should we put our contract or our resources at risk?
Why did you bid if you knew the money?
I didn't know that. We just found that out going through the docs a week or so ago. We just found that I would never have bid it if I thought they didn't have
any
money.
Why did you think it was encumbered?
It was the appearance of the meetings, at the pre-bid meeting and everything, that the money was in the bank.
So can I just, have you done any work, any of the work on this?
We did the work, the first assignment's done.
What was that?
That was over on the Winter side.
What was that?
That was for the contractor. That's what Ed mentioned. That was for the fixture was in danger of falling. It was, came off top of a pole. That's it.
A fixture.
Right.
Okay. So
we intended on doing more. We had personnel also at Alawai to proceed, and things just stopped. So instead of fighting the DOBR manager, we said, okay, let's wait. And here we are.
Can I ask?
Yeah.
You say on the first page, towards the bottom, the paragraph starts, this delay condition. The last sentence of that paragraph says, the state initially understood the labor issue.
Right.
And requested contractor to use subcontractor.
Right.
Who is that person?
Don Ford.
Who?
Don Ford, the superintendent.
John Ford?
No, Don, Mr. Ford.
And where does he work?
He retired.
And who does he, what division did he work for?
DOBR, a Wagner. He was a superintendent. On the contract and on the spec, we were told to coordinate with two operations persons, Mr. Ford and James Mortacama.
And who's that one?
And James. James is here. So we were told to coordinate with the operations guys. Okay, it's fine. And then
Ford request you to use subcontractors
yes.
as an interim measure?
Yes.
You have that in writing?
No, he said just do it.
He told you verbally?
Yes.
He told you to your face?
Yes. And we did it. And it was just justified by...
When the state canceled and rescinded the subcontractor, was that John Ford?
No, that was Megan.
That was the president.
Manager,
okay.
So we just want to get out there and get it done. That's why I started this memo. If you want to terminate for convenience, that's your prerogative. If you want to terminate for fault, the state bears part of the fault. That's it.
Okay.
That's why it's contested. Now, you denied the contestant, but that's not the end of the story. We just want to get out there and work for you guys, get the work done. That's the simplest explanation. We have the resource, we have the people, we have the licenses. We know the harbors. We know what needs to get done. In your package, there's already a pre-plan. Everything's pre-planned. Our people are briefed. There's a procedure in there, what we use. Everything's already done. We're just waiting for a thumbs up and go get it done.
Have you had a discussion such as you're having today with the Mr. Underwood or the Dobar staff?
No, you know, Ed just came into the equation here. What, just last week, when we found notice of this, we were told only to coordinate with Don, with James on operations, and then when I talked to James, he'd say, talk to Megan. When I talked to Megan, she says, little, just do the work. But it's like tying your hands. Our people are deployed.
There was a letter dated December 18th from Megan to saying that you provided an invoice on October 20th, 2017.
That might have been a different contract. That's a different contract. That's not this contract.
What page? What did that? What did they do?
But this contract isn't about the power deficits that we're talking
no,
about.
No, that's an issue that we told them we're pleased to help them with and do the work. But that's not part of this contract.
Okay. But did you submit an invoice on 2017 for
Pebbleson's? The DWR was invoiced, and what we received back is that the items were delivered at the Alawai storage area. And since then, they've checked fine. We don't know where they are. That's why there's a question there. And then we asked them, okay, what part number do you want? I suggest, matter of fact, they put that back out for rebid.
Who asked them to deliver it to the Alawai? Who ordered it? Did you order the part?
No, the office did. It was another senior electrician. That job, we have resolution for that also.
So who wrote this invoice?
The company generated the invoice. The company generated the invoice.
What company? Your company?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So you generated an invoice to get a money paid for pedestals.
Right. But then months later on, we were told that was not the right item.
No,
what's the right item?
Wait. If I order something.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And I send this board member an invoice. Mm-hmm. To pay me, okay, I'm responsible for that item.
Yes.
To him.
That's right.
He's got to see the item.
That's right.
Right? But they didn't see the item. You're saying that they delivered because you bought the item, correct? Mm-hmm. You addressed where the item was going to be sent to.
The company did, yeah.
Correct?
Yeah.
Wasn't them buying the item, it wasn't them.
Right.
Okay, so why didn't you make sure the item arrived?
I had spoken to the manager of Alawai to ask him to make sure that things were covered. And matter of fact, we had assumed that was there, boxed up, covered in plastic.
No.
Because later on, no.
You understand what I'm trying to get to,
yeah, but this statement you're saying is after the fact. It's after, it may not be.
Okay, it may not be doing anything we're talking about,
right?
Except for this concept. You invoice somebody to pay you.
Yes.
And they're saying they never received the product.
It's still something that's in
conjecture.
It's still on the table.
Okay, wherever it is, it's in the ozone. Okay. The point is that if I'm asking for money from somebody, I've got to deliver them the product.
That's right.
You can't say, well, I had it sent to you guys. You're still responsible until it comes in the door.
Understand.
Because you've already invoiced to collect the money.
Understand.
You know, the sad part for me is somehow through their own protocol, they sent you a check. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the sad part.
Understand. When we went and evaluated Alawai, they said that they had moved things to things. We don't know where the product actually is.
No, I understand.
But I agree, we're still responsible. That's correct.
That's basically the concept.
That's fine.
Yeah. Thank you.
Other questions? Nope. Okay, thank you.
Is there anything else?
No, thanks. Any other public testimony on this? Okay, somebody want to make a motion? Somebody want to make a motion?
I make a motion to terminate.
Okay, so to approve the submittal as?
Correct.
To approve this item as submitted. Is there a second on that?
I second.
Any further discussion? If not, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Contract is terminated. Okay, I'm going to do, Land Division 3, Land Division items, and then M12.
What I got left is D1 and 2 right of entry.
Okay, so I'm just going to say, does anybody have any questions on D1? Tommy, you got any questions? D1?
No.
Okay, if not, is there a motion to approve D1 as submitted?
Second.
Wait, hang on a second. I'm sorry. What is D1?
Easement amendment.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Okay, is there a motion? So, was that a motion?
Moved in second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. See, D5, anybody have any questions? Not, is there a motion to approve as submitted?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
D7, any questions? Not, is there a motion to approve as submitted?
So moved.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thanks for your patience, Russell. Okay, just to be sure, last agenda item is M12. Oh, sorry.
J. J4?
Anybody have J3? Anybody have questions on J3? Okay, any questions on J3? Okay, if there are no questions on J3, is there a motion to approve J3 as submitted?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, thank you.
Chair, for the record, was there an official withdrawal of items?
We made a motion to defer, didn't we?
Right.
J1 and J2 was a motion.
We deferred it.
Motion to...
I'm talking about the first RP this day is dead.
Oh, I apologize.
Okay, back up.
Okay, on J3, on the spreadsheet, the very first line, it's the wrong name. We have to take it off the spreadsheet.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay, so then...
Yeah, we've just taken that one off.
J&M Fishing?
Yes.
Yes.
The first one.
Okay, so the motion is to approve the submittal with the amendment to delete item item A-6.5, first line on the first page. Okay, so friendly amendment, and so motion to approve as...
Wait, they got questions.
Does anyone have any questions?
I have a couple of questions. Yes, we're not trying to get any back rent.
No.
Okay. And why are we not trying to get back rent?
We just wanted to clean this matter up and move it forward.
We don't know exactly when every structure was built, either.
How long have these structures been up there, if you have any idea?
Some since the harbor was built, back with DOT.
Okay. All right.
There have been some throughout the years. Recently, there's been nothing because we put a moratorium on building.
Here, this is my concern. I'm going to support this motion because it's better than nothing. At least we're getting started now. But I think that you need to document why we're not trying to collect the back rent, because it's a big number. Nobody builds something down there and expects to rent it for free. And all of these these structures behind the boats, behind their slips. These are big structures. They got all kinds of stuff in these structures. When we used to paddle down there, Honopaha, we see these things are open. These big structures, there's a lot of equipment and stuff. Everybody's got their own stuff in it. It's like a store shed for each one of these commercial fishing boats. And so it's not a small item. And I don't want your staff, and us get criticized in the future why we don't say anything, why we didn't collect the back rent. So I think you need to document why we're not collecting it. That's all.
So if I could, because we have had this conversation in prior review, so I believe the reasons are that these structures were built by these people or their predecessors at their expense to provide shade and some utility when the DOT did not provide any. When the harbor was first constructed, they built the slips, sometimes no way to get down a slope to the slips, and no shade. So that's why they built them. And so we inherited them as is from the DOT back in 1991.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And but so you're right that we could look at back rent. Mm-hmm. And based on the origin of this, mm-hmm, I think we felt it was equitable to start now charging rent and let the facts of the origins of these account for the fact that they didn't pay for it. Now, we could argue that. I'm happy to do that, but I think the reason.
I think what you just said, Chair, is satisfactory.
Okay.
That you folks gave it due consideration, and the record now reflects that's what occurred. So I'm okay with that. Okay. That's all I wanted to do, make sure that we show that we did our job correctly.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
By your words, it sounds like you did it just right. So okay. I'm fine.
So okay. How much money is going to come from these ships?
I didn't total it. It's going to be a few thousand dollars a year. It's not a huge.
So that's another reason to move forward.
Thank you. Right.
So
you're right. That was actually we had that
one of the considerations.
One of the considerations.
And I'm looking at 50 cents. I'm going total.
Well, the in-house valuation $6 per square foot a year, which is a lot actually. On a per acre, you know, it's not very much because there's, you know, small.
500, 1,000.
You know, basically there's like 100 square feet. Mm-hmm. So it's just.
It looks like it's $3,000 or $4,000.
Can you talk a little bit though about the in-house valuation of 50 cents a square foot per month?
The Hawaii district manager felt that would be. I think he had discussed it with the voters, and I think he felt that it'd be something that would be palatable to, you know, all parties involved.
Well, it's not the best answer I've heard, but what was our bid for the boat storage area?
Oh,
the auction. It worked out about $1, wasn't it about $1 a square foot a year?
It was 9 acres at 100, what was it? What's the yearly?
400 something, wasn't it
400? Oh yes, four.
So that was, my memory of that was it was about $1 a square foot a year. So I'm not gonna kick about, and this is dock side, okay, but it's also, who else is gonna use it?
Nobody else, it's an exclusive use.
Besides the whoever is, who wants to have a shade house next to somebody's boat besides the guy that
there's no other market. There's no other market for it.
Boat. So I'm not going to kick about it, but okay. And I'm glad we are doing something about this. It has been, it's apparently something that first came up in the 1990s.
Newspaper.
I had, the newspaper has commented on it and asked me if I knew anything about what happened in the 1990s when this originally came up and
was dropped, I think, before, I think it never got to the board in the 1990s. But that was the first time, I think, that there was some effort by the DLNR to get money for this situation. And I don't know why, but no, glad we're doing something about it, and let's go.
Remind me, this first one is the wrong name, is that what it is?
Wrong name and wrong SNP number.
Yeah. Okay, so we have a sunshine issue.
Yes.
We can't just correct it.
Here's one more thing that I just thought of when Chris asked that question.
Chris.
You're going to have public hearings coming up very shortly. I know that there's going to be one in Hilo in early March on the new fees, wharfage rates or fees. And there, I got called up to make sure I could attend. It's going to be at the State Building in Hilo. And I recall the prospective rates for Wailua, for example, are a couple dollars a square foot, right? For this, your slip space.
Linear foot.
Linear foot, yes. Yeah, a couple dollars. So a linear foot means 1 foot wide and however long it is, right? Yes. So this square foot isn't a linear foot. This is a rectangle. I mean, this is a square, right?
It's a square foot.
So is this consistent? This number here, this square foot, these structures, they're not all square. They're all different shapes and sizes.
Yes.
But you're using a square foot. Is that, is the same thing as a linear foot? No. Okay. Is it more or less? Because they're gonna ask, how does this compare with this? Assuming they're educated enough to know that what we just did today.
Mm-hmm. I think this is more.
I mean, if you actually took the, the deck of the boat, they're paying less per square foot of deck.
Right. No, but you pay for the whole slip, not the deck. You pay for the rectangle where the slip is, the whole amount.
If you consider that whole rectangle, they're paying a lot less per square.
And this is because this is considered an accessory structure.
Okay,
to
well
the
that's
slip.
A good that's a good distinction. This is an accessory thing.
Yeah.
All right. And they have private property on. They have their own private property on the pier, right? Mm-hmm. And other people who go in there, they can't leave their stuff in there at night. You have your own private place you can lock up. And so that's a good reason to charge them something. All right.
Okay,
thank you. Just looking at this quickly, I think we'll clear over 20,000 a year. I'm just adding up all the square footage.
Which is the point?
Well, this is that's the monthly.
Yeah, per year.
We'll clear 25,000 a year.
Yeah.
Okay,
so right now I have a motion to approve with one amendment, which is to delete the first line on that spreadsheet. And that's all we have. And we have good discussion documenting the reasons for us charging the rate and for charging it going forward, but not retroactively. So, and we have a second on that, right?
I second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day. Oh, my
turn.
Last, but not least.
I would love to say we'll start here, but I have no idea what we're starting to do.
Okay, we are on M12.
Good stuff, yes. Okay.
M12. Mm-hmm. M12 is our last agenda item.
Is there anything writing for M12?
And M12 is just a list of the items below them.
But they're supposed to bring back to the board?
Yeah.
You know, all the questions we had?
Book. Open your book. That's it. In the back.
The book.
Oh, they never give you?
Okay, so the first one on M12 is from April 27, 2018, an RP. for freight forward for Hawaii?
No, that's a mission.
That says item.
Okay, I'm just summarizing for everyone. Okay, so there's a request for DOT to provide a report to the board that reviews the records of revocable permits that have come up for approval beginning in 2016 and states which permits can be put up for public auction. Are you guys with me? Do I need to do that again?
No.
Okay.
Sorry, we did not provide that that list up until this time. We've been talking to our AGs, and they're indicating that once a revocable permit is issued, it becomes it just belongs to DOT. So you gave us the approval to issue it. How we handle it subsequent to, because all of our revocable permits do so, they can be renewed at our discretion. It is our discretion, is what basically we've been told.
So that wasn't really the question. The question was, are some of your revocable permits dispositions that should go to public auction rather than by revocable permit?
There, undoubtedly, we have, because we have thousands of, we have lots of revocable permits. Undoubtedly, some could have gone out to auction at some point, or potentially, I'm not sure about getting to it now, but we would have to, let me go back and do a further look at this with that understanding that we're looking at what would make sense if we put it out out on the street, rather than saying I've got 100 RPs in the terminal building at Honolulu, and they're all to airlines.
Right. So
what we're talking about.
I think okay. So I'm just going to do a starter conversation here. So for DOT,
yes.
At least airports, probably harbors too. You have some parcels that are directly for airport purposes, mm-hmm. and some that are you're acting, on a proprietary basis. Not airports is a government airlines and stuff is okay. governmental, mm-hmm. but you have other lands that are revenue generating. You
yes.
kind of got on hold, mm-hmm. and the revocable permit discussion generally with DLNR and DHHL and everybody is that. How long do you have properties in revocable permits? Do people have, are there other people interested? Because a revocable permit you can do on a direct basis.
Right.
Are you charging the right rate?
Yes.
And, to make sure that the public is getting fair value mm-hmm. and fair opportunity. And so probably most of yours are either governmental purposes or some kind of a temporary arrangement and all that, but are there some of them that are in a long, have they been going on for decades, like we have some, that should be long-term dispositions?
We do have some long-term revocable permits, particularly when you're dealing with the airlines. And the reason that the airports prefer to have a revocable permit with its airline tenants is we have had tenants in the past, and just recently, not for the same reason. We've had airlines fly away.
Sure, I totally get that.
And that's why we have prefer to have the permit
right.
for anything inside the terminal, for
right.
example,
right.
so that I can take it back
30
days.
I think we all would agree to that.
Yeah,
right.
That's a good portion of
right.
the revocable permit.
It's the unrelated to airports and harbors. Dispositions that I think are the ones mm-hmm. that the public cares about because they want to make sure that everybody has fair opportunity and fair
yes.
price.
We do have some of those too, yes, we do, that have been there for a while. And the only thing that I can say on one of the reasons that we have not touched on them is that we did change some of statute to say that
revenue generation is an airport, an airport function.
So, well, that's so, true. I mean, that's true for us,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
For DLNR, too.
So the idea was that we could go directly to somebody with a contract, with not having out to go going out to auction for it, and then could
right,
could
make it. Yeah. I think what mm-hmm. our interest mm-hmm. is in ensuring that there's a good public purpose and a public price for it, mm-hmm. because if you have a long-term revocable permit, there's never any review of it. It never goes out to public auction. How does the public know it's a fair deal for the public?
The only thing we can say is that, like any all of our rest of our property, we do appraisals every 3 years, and we adjust all of the rents after that, at the end of that three-year period. So not, you know, each new appraisal, we apply the rate changes. And actually, if you are an airline, because the airlines have an agreement with us that the airlines will establish what their new rates are every year for certain things, that goes up as well. But it is on an annual thing.
Stan, and then you.
There are different schools of thought on what the public interest dictates in this situation. Because the Board of Land and Natural Resources are the trustees for the state land, we have a fiduciary duty to look beyond, we do a good job. We can't stop there.
Sure.
Because we assume everybody does a good job. But when it comes to disposition of public property, our fiduciary duty at least extends to making sure that the Sunshine Law applies in the disposition of state land to the extent that it's reasonable and feasible. So that when something comes before the land board and a docket is presented by an agency, the Department of Transportation, Airports Division, for example, you have a proposal that is published
yes.
on the internet, and it can go viral around the world. So it's an opportunity for the community, those people who are interested, to assess the regularity of what you propose. So that is the benefit that runs concurrently with our review of your operations. So that when your council or your staff concludes that we bring it to you once, we don't have to bring it to you again in the future, the opportunity for the sunshine to look at the transaction that might go on for years is curtailed. Mm-hmm. And that is where the heat arises in this analysis, the friction, if as you were, in what we are doing. So I think what the chair is seeking and what we're seeking is some kind of a agreeable formula for your presentation. When I say your, I mean the State Department of Transportation, Airports Division, and Harbors, which seem to be the ones that come to us the most.
Yes.
Some kind of a periodic mm-hmm. publishing to us by way of you give us a progress report or something, mm-hmm. so that
the sunshine that was required at the outset is maintained so the public knows that it was in the public interest. That's all. That's what it comes down to.
In most of what we supply, I think we do this relatively okay. I say, for example, if we're asking for approval for a lease, if we cite a rate or there is an adjustment period, there is a calculation that is followed to determine the rate for that.
We have one today, right? The contract, we have one of the contract. It's in the contract, $25 a month.
Yeah.
So we understand that.
Yeah.
In some situations, like you have just testified, that you have some situations where the long-term dispositions that are not related to the airline that do not come to our attention. Right?
Once, they did at one point. Let's okay. say,
but they don't continue to come to our attention after the initial disposition.
Yes.
All right. So I think that that's the area where we need to have sunlight.
Okay.
And reasonable men and women can differ on what that looks like. But I think that because we're all from the same government, you know, this state of Hawaii government, that we have to find a way to, as trustees, bring sunlight to those transactions that is reasonable under the circumstances, and it can't just go away after the initial disposition, because I don't think we could, I know I couldn't agree to that, because I don't think that I'm doing my job as a trustee of the state land.
Okay, and
that's all.
Yeah. And what I was trying to illustrate is the fact that as far as having current rents, we do have a statewide appraisal every 3 years, and we publish the rates. We adjust all of the rates for anybody who is on a revocable permit. Anybody who doesn't have a lease, we get in there and change all of those rates to come up to the current rate done as far as that appraisal came up.
So I think the benefit of board review is just outside eyes and you know, making sure nothing's falling through the cracks there.
Sure.
That's it.
Okay.
I don't know if it's in our... Is there any way to ask that annually they put out their RPs or leased areas so that we can at least review them once a year, like we do for land division and everybody else?
Yeah, if
because that way at least the public gets to see all the pieces.
Is that something
you can do? It can be done, yeah. If that's what the board wants.
Well, because I think at least that way, if we're talking transparency, at least the public can get to see it once a year.
To what level of
information?
The ones that we provide annually would probably be a good model. It's what the disposition is, whether it's an RP or a lease, where it is. It doesn't have to have the address, but which island it is, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, who the disposition is to?
Character of use.
Since when?
Mm-hmm.
Since when?
And the rate.
Yeah. Current rate.
And then I think probably what you would want us to be able to say is whether it's for airport purposes or government. You know, is it an airport use or is it a commercial use?
And if you have a company, you name the company and their address.
Well, you don't need address.
The name of the company. And if it's an individual, what their name is.
Yeah.
Name of whoever's occupying.
I think what we have is a tax map key.
Mm-hmm.
No, do we have
tax map
key. You folks use tax map keys.
Yeah, so, I mean, ours is a good...
We use space numbers.
Space numbers.
Yeah.
Space numbers.
Yeah, they're all in.
That's fine.
The airport terminal.
Joe, helicopter pad, 100 square feet, price he pays.
Do you have that in an existing spreadsheet?
Something like that?
Yeah.
Yep. It's not quite in the format that you know you're talking about, but yeah, it's close.
Okay, I think that would be.
That would be reviewed.
Go a long way. Yeah.
Okay, continue something annually on that. Sure.
And it wouldn't be something that this board would take action on, right? It would be
we
for information.
We would not take any action on it, right? Yeah. Right.
And it would be in an open public session, and so it would be available for public scrutiny.
Well, we wouldn't necessarily take action, but if there's something on it that the public public comes here, the public wants to make comment on something that's on the agenda. And they say, well, we raised the issue on this because that's this guy's cousin and he keeps popping up. His cousin is doing really well. So, you know, whatever. You make up your own hypothetical.
Or somebody comes in and says, hey, I've been trying to get that space for 10 years.
Right. I've been trying to get it for 10 years, but they're always painting the building or something. So you get the idea.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Okay, let's go on to the next one. Okay, so issuance of a direct lease for a development, construction of a operation of, oh, this is Upolu Point.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so what we had asked was, and I would like to refer more particularly to the minutes because they were more detailed than that, but we were asking questions about what exactly is the business plan, what is the disposal of any toxic waste? And I guess because this is in an area that has no buildings at all, what is the environmental review?
No buildings, or almost no buildings.
What kind of environmental review would be done on this disposition? Yes. Who's going to be flying in and out of there? And in particular, what kind of public input has been sought on whether this business is appropriate for this location?
They did have a meeting with unfortunately, I wasn't there, so I can't give you the name of the group and everything, but I will provide it later, in which it was a public forum in which they came and talked about what he wanted to do and what Ed Bullock. And it was open to questions and answers, the whole thing. And they eventually, the group said, you know, we're okay with that. I'll get you the details on that. Well, I was waiting to try to get all of this stuff together, but I'll send that to you right away.
Okay, like one of the constituents is the adjacent Heiau. Did you reach out to them?
We did not reach out to them specifically, only that the initial one that we had done was the first time that we'd gone out on anything like this, and the fact that it was welcomed at the meeting, we kind of kept going to see about the other things that we needed to get done. While it does follow our master plan for Upolu. We did find out that some I's and T's on the ground were not followed. They were not completed actually in the layout of Upolu years and years ago. So we didn't do anything with him to move him along until we got some of that cleaned up. So now we're considering it again. We were going to put it on the agenda, but of course it was taken off. And he was one of the guys who was here this morning with me. And he's looking forward to do that. Yeah, and we'll get you more details.
Okay. So I would ask you to go back and read the minutes and make sure you have everything covered before you resubmit it. And I'm going to probably send the submittal back with that request.
That's fine. Sure.
Okay. Okay, right of entry to Kauai for Gate and Baldwin, Port Allen Airport. Okay, so this is a request for a report on the feasibility of relief of an injunction against helicopters flying over sensitive historic sites, like the salt pans.
Yeah, at the time, I did mention when it was brought up that the Federal Aviation Administration has control of the skies and all of that. I did talk to them with the comments that were brought up during the meeting as to what is their position on it, and it is what they call a, hang on, let me get the number here. It is actually called to be, and it's uncontrolled airspace. FAA keeps an eye on it, but they don't, they're not sitting there saying move up to 2,500 square 100 feet, drop down to, you know, turn your heading to such and such. Like if you were coming into an airport, or you were in a highly congested area, you'd be getting directions all the time from the tower to move this way, move that way, go up, go down, what have you. In open skies like that, they don't have that. The only thing that they do try to do is if there are complaints that are dangerous activities for aviation, they do follow up on that. They actually had no comment on the question that was raised about the salt ponds.
So,
take a flight. So, port in an airport.
Yes.
There's no traffic control. So.
No.
It's unrestricted airspace, you said.
Yes.
So they can fly any place they want.
Relatively, yes. They, you know, you have people who will fly in and out of the that area in different types of aircraft. You've got guys who've got little bicycle airplanes, and all they do is they'll go to the end of the runway and they'll start pedaling, and then they'll raise up and, you know, they're out and flying. Somebody else has got a nice glider. It'll have to have somebody pull him along. Somebody may come in with a Cessna. I mean, they just want to do touch and goes, and they'll come back and forth and just practice. It's not a busy airport in that sense.
So from the FAA's point of view, a helicopter could take off and go and hover above the salt pans and let everybody look at it and stir up dust and...
That is not the way we have told the helicopter operators that they are supposed to fly in there. What we actually have designed for them, and this is not an FAA requirement, but we told them from where your pads are, you can go this way around the mountain behind you. That's it.
So do now, you have
could,
that
they
in...
could actually file, they could come off the ground and head directly towards the ocean and follow the ocean. We'd have nothing to say about that.
So do you have that in writing?
I think we have something that is, the only thing that I've actually seen is a drawing of that, that actually shows where the path is supposed to be. But let me go see if we, this would be something that would have been maybe 30 years ago. I'll have to go take a look.
30 years ago. Yeah. Because,
That would not prohibit anybody.
Broader discussion about regulating flight paths for mm-hmm. helicopters that are bothering people, and mm-hmm. The general direction of those discussions has been: you guys say the FAA controls it. FAA yep. says, you know, this is what we control. And we don't mm-hmm. care about anything else, mm-hmm. and nobody's actually saying you cannot fly over the salt pans.
Right,
and so. That's what the public is looking for. And I know Mr. Roerig has this opinion very strongly about Puna.
Well, and at the same time, realize that we don't have any jurisdiction over the air either.
Right, but if you don't and the FAA doesn't and it's a problem, then we got to figure out the solution.
How to do that, yes.
So,
yeah, go ahead.
My question is this. Mm-hmm. When you say it's uncontrolled airspace,
yes.
If I would look under the case law, would it say that the FAA doesn't agree or disagree on state restrictions covering the same airspace. In other words, if the FAA said it's uncontrolled airspace as far as the FAA is concerned, does that mean that the state of Hawaii can put reasonable regulations on that airspace as long as it doesn't violate anything that the FAA has already ruled on?
Interesting question, since the actual airspace is federal.
The actual airspace is federal?
For any of the, so like, for example, if you are around an airport, yes, that is federalized airspace. The FAA is a federal entity. They have control of it.
How far?
Huh? It is as far as they want to make it, actually, depending on what they think is safe.
But there's maps that show that.
Oh, yeah, they'll show you where.
Show how high it goes.
It does.
If it says uncontrolled, doesn't that mean uncontrolled?
No, when we say uncontrolled, it means that the FAA is not actively controlling the airspace.
Okay, so yeah. If they are not actively controlling the airspace,
yes,
then there's no federal preemption, and the state can put reasonable restrictions on the use of that airspace. Isn't that correct?
That would be an interesting thought, because as far as I've been told, only FAA has control over, to the extent that they want to exercise control, they have control over anything that flies.
That's not entirely the whole story, because I have read numerous decisions on this issue.
Good.
that suggests that if it's a public nuisance, that is a cause of action that you can bring. If it denies a constitutional right, for example, unreasonable searches and seizure, if you hover over my bedroom window and you look in, the lights are on at night, that could be an unreasonable search or seizure. It's a constitutional right. There's cases all over the United States that litigate the constitutional rights of American people for freedom of unreasonable action of helicopters and small planes over their property. And so it isn't just the FAA. Mm-hmm. The FAA has certain restrictions, but some of them are constitutional rights that the people of the United States have by reason, and the state constitution of the state of Hawaii goes even farther. So we do have some rights of hovering planes. And so when hovering planes or hovering helicopters are hovering over pash rights areas, I raise a legitimate question whether or not we have a constitutional duty under the pash rights provision of the Constitution to prevent unreasonable exercise of those pash rights. And when they're splashing water at the salt pond, and so they're destroying the opportunity to make the kalai or the Hawaiian salt in those ponds, I think there's a legitimate question whether or not they're breaching that duty.
And so let's say that if that is the case, then who enforces?
Land Board. We have the, under the Constitution of the State of Hawaii, the Board of Land and Natural Resources has a duty under Article 12, Section 7 of the State Constitution to protect those rights.
Okay. So then, who does the enforcement? That's what I don't know. They
go
up and they chase down the helicopter when he lands.
I'm not sure of that, but. Again, I come back to the proposition, we're all working for the same government.
No, I agree.
So between your agency and our agency, I'm sure we can come up with a reasonable answer how to stop unreasonable pasture rights abuse.
It will be interesting because, like I say, In most things like this, or anything that deals with airspace generally, we always return to Uncle Sam. We look at the FAA and say, what is your requirement for this?
I understand that.
And then if it comes out to be open, then maybe there's something
so,
that could be
you know,
done.
One other discussion point we've had in the past on this is, and it goes back to the point of once we review a revocable permit, mm-hmm. do we have the right to review it
right.
at the next disposition? Is can mm-hmm. we condition revocable permits for helicopters using airfields on agreement not to fly over certain routes? And so that is something that we have, you know, seriously discussed, and I think probably will continue to do so if we don't find another way of.
I think you already have that in the case of hospitals and things like that, where aircraft are generally directed away from, if they can, or at least high enough so you don't get sonic booms while you're sitting in the, the operating theater, so that the aircraft are generally away from. Or hospitals are not immediately under regular flight patterns. It doesn't mean that people don't fly over them. Helicopters do all the time. But it's not a flight path. Yeah. Flight paths are generally things where you that are fixed in space, if you would. So when you're coming in to land or you're taking off, that's a flight.
So for example, if you have a flight path mm-hmm. map that you can give us. What if I were to write a letter to the holders of the revocable permits or whatever you have, dispositions mm-hmm. at Port Allen mm-hmm. Airfield, and note that nearby there is a historic mm-hmm. And cultural site, and remind them that they are supposed to stick to these flight paths, and ask them not to fly over this. Is that anything wrong with that?
Not as far as I can tell, and it all depends on how much that is actually constrained airspace or not. Like I said, in our case, we have a single runway, which is not that far away from the
right, but there's all kind of other directions.
I'm just saying from the airport's position, in the fact is that we have jurisdiction over the airfield. Once you get off the ground, technically they're not ours. Doesn't mean that somebody else can't say something.
Can airfields be closed?
They are periodically.
Bulldozed closed.
That's happened too, yeah. Generally that has to go through, since there is lots of times there's federal money behind an airfield. The feds have got to get involved as well.
Thank you.
Chair.
Yeah. One of the complaints that I've heard is that the blue helicopter, I think that's the one, color blue, they go over Rainbow Falls, and Rainbow Falls is about half a mile from Hill Hospital. Mm-hmm. And when they do the banking turns, for some reason it makes the air go boop, 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 boop. Mm-hmm. And there have been reports that the surgeons are doing surgery in the hospital and the room goes boop, boop, boop. And so they have complained that those planes are, when they're doing their turns, tight mm-hmm. turns near Rainbow Falls, if that occurs.
Sure.
Is there a way that we can put into our RPs or leases, whatever we have for those helicopter commercial operations at the Hilo International Airport, we call it, mm-hmm. Put reasonable restrictions on these, let's say, health areas or, you know, old folks home or hospice, wherever there's a health issue, that we give them reasonable notice of restrictions that we don't want them to get too close. And I don't know how too close it is, but could we do that? Or have the chair send a letter saying, watch out for that kind of stuff?
I think we would need, if we really wanted to close off portions of the airspace or limit it sufficiently, that would be federal. That would be not state.
Sure. Okay, your question is, okay. So like in Port Allen, he said, the only guys can restrict areas would be the FAA, correct?
Yes.
So if, say the chair or the mayor of Kauai write to the FAA and says, you know, we want to restrict the helicopters from flying over, and they would pursue telling the helicopter pilots or the helicopter company not to fly over there.
What they don't, though. That's the problem.
What, if the feds were to do that, what they would do is they would issue out a notice that certain airspaces are closed or only certain types of aircraft can go through that area. That would be what the feds do if they're going to do anything.
But they don't do anything.
But the problem is enforcement.
At that point, it's still going to be a federal thing. It's not going to be a state thing.
So if the federal government, the FAA agrees that, we won't fly, we'll restrict this area in Port Allen, then whoever flies over the salt ponds would be in violation of the airspace.
If they did it appropriately, yeah. The problem that the FAA was likely to have is that how does that impact the operation of the airport? What's going to happen is if you have something to put up a barrier, let's say the runway runs this way, salt pans are here, so you're going to have a barrier here in effect, so that you just come down here. Is that sufficient to not?
Not necessarily to put up the barrier. You got the fence. So
No. I'm just that when I say barrier, I just mean the one up in the air. Imaginary one in the air. Yeah.
So I mean, from my duty as the state historic preservation officer, I would be referencing the importance of not conducting your business in a way that harms a historic cultural and historic site.
Yes. And that would be it's not easy to get through the FAA, but I would send the letter to the local office and ask them to run it up the chain, because they themselves are not given the power to say, okay, nobody can fly here, you can't fly there.
I don't even have to say don't fly over there. I can say don't do anything that we have noticed that flyovers disturb this site, and remind them that they're. Yeah. I have to look it up. But.
The flyovers mentioned would be good. If you get too broad with it, of course you've got the parallel runway.
One of the benefits that would come from the historical preservation officer's actions. By sending a letter to these different entities,
can I ask a question?
Yes.
We got quorum.
We still quorum.
Okay, no, but did James go to the airport already?
I don't know.
Probably.
Holy cow! I gotta go. I gotta be at the airport in 25 minutes.
Yeah, you and me both.
Are you on my flight?
550, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, I think to land the plane, I have to be there 5 minutes to five. So, anyway, to land the plane, I think it would be useful to put the commercial helicopter and small plane operator on notice that the state wants them to assist us, wants the public to assist in protecting these rights. Okay. And then if there's a lawsuit, and somebody wants to try to get an injunction to enjoin certain helicopter pilots or helicopter companies from getting too low, then at least the agreed person, whoever that might be, or a group, community association, at least they have something official from the state of Hawaii on which to base their claim. That is very important. Because if you breach some kind of a public duty, that is some indicia for the court to find that injunctive relief is appropriate.
Okay, I'm just going to like, okay, one more. Robert's Tours, whose issue is that? Is that yours, Keone?
That's my issue.
Robert's Tours, justification for $25 monthly rental.
Roberts.
Oh, yeah. In this case, this is something I was not aware of until just recently for some reason.
I should have a taxi.
What we have in Robert's case is Robert's is not only the leaky shuttle operator, but also is the shuttle bus the drivers for the shuttle bus that we use to get around at the terminal and get you to the Conrack or to the other places in the terminal. If you've got to go from Hawaiian to United or something, and you can go out and grab and jump on the bus and run over there. They are helping out the airport at the moment with a different types of vehicles that might be used on the airport to reduce some of the pollution that comes out of our regular buses. We've got some, forgotten exactly what it was that they were doing. But anyway, Roberts
set up a pilot system on renewable energy.
Yes, thank you. Roberts set up the system for them on their property.
Okay.
We got to go.
Yep.
Okay, so
can
what you're saying
this
is
explanation
this one is an airport function, what you're saying, and it's a temporary thing.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. All right, meeting adjourned. Thank you very much.
We got to adjourn the time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've got to start making these days shorter there, Sheriff.
Sometimes we don't have much of a say.
Oh, wow. He wants the M, the little M. Meeting adjourned at 4:40.